You're listening to Real World News. Energy and climate change.
Interview with Karen Orenstein from Friends of the Earth, United States. U.S. Secretary of State Hillary Clinton announced on Thursday that the country will join the fund of $100 billion a year from 2020 to developing countries if there is an agreement in Copenhagen, although she didn't say how much they will contribute with or how much of that money will be publicly or privately sourced. Friends of the Earth U.S. President Eric Pica welcomed the decision of his country to finally speak of contributing with long-term finance to face a climate crisis, but stated that the proposal announced by Clinton is hollow. The amount falls far short of what the United Nations says is needed. Inadequate funding will condemn the poorest to languish in poverty while the world suffers from climate chaos. In addition, loans and private investments must not substitute for public money, and it is unclear how much of this package is public, said Pica, according to a press release issued by Friends of the Earth International. On Thursday, Real World Radio interviewed Karen Orenstein from Friends of the Earth US, who has been following closely the negotiations, especially in terms of the role of her country. She blames the US of blocking all ways towards an agreement with real solutions. Orenstein also said that Barack Obama's policy with reference to climate change is substantially the same as the policy of his predecessor, George Bush.
Real World Radio is interviewing Karen Orenstein. She's a member of Friends of the Earth United States here in Copenhagen. How are you, Karen?
Oh, I'm fine. How are you, Jose?
I'm fine. Thank you. Karen, you have been following until yesterday at least the negotiations inside the Bell Center, and you know very, very well the United States position there. What can you tell us about that?
Well, I think it's pretty clear that the U.S. position or the U.S. objective is to drag down the rest of the world in terms of ambition level for reducing greenhouse gas emissions, obligations to provide finance. I mean, just everything. I think the U.S. is really trying to get everybody to the lowest common denominator in pretty much every possible way. It's incredibly discouraging that the country most responsible for the climate crisis and the world's wealthiest economy is coming to the negotiations with this idea of exceptionalism and special treatment rather than looking at anything through the lens of climate debt, for example. But they're very, very, very far from the concept of climate debt.
Are there any figures that the United States has offered in these negotiations?
Yeah, the commitment for greenhouse gas emission reductions, their mitigation target, is about 3% below 1990 levels by 2020, and that's contingent on the actions of other countries, including China, and also with, you know, tons and tons and tons of offsets and other tricks. And then today they just announced, Secretary of State from the U.S., Hillary Clinton, flew in today and announced a longer-term finance goal of around $100 billion U.S. dollars. But what that is actually is that's the total. The U.S. contribution is we don't know how much. We also don't know how much is public versus how much is private, and you can guess that a lot of it would rely on carbon markets. And also, it's contingent on what the U.S. has called an operational accord. It's maybe their own word or their own terms, which would require China and other major developing countries to take mitigation commitments. It would require certain types of transparency on the part of certain developing countries. It would require internationalization of certain commitments. I mean, it has all these extra requirements, and this financing is not supposed to be contingent on these sorts of things. Moreover, the amount, $100 billion, while it might sound large, it's far less than what is needed. You know, the UN is saying now between $500 and $600 billion a year, mostly public finance. The Africa group, which is a negotiating bloc here of African countries, they're saying developed countries have to contribute 5% of the gross national product globally, in the long term, and in the short term between $400 and $500 billion annually. So the U.S. is nowhere near the scale that we need. It's nowhere near the delivery mechanism we need. So it's the U.S. is not a helpful player at these negotiations, and it has no idea of the context in which it operates.
Can we say, Karen, that in the climate change talks, there is no difference between Obama administration and Bush administration?
I think as far as the substance, there's very little difference. Obama's nicer. He believes in climate. He believes climate change is real. His negotiators are very smart and they're very clever. But the substance of what they're putting forward is quite similar, except they just frame it in a nicer package. But yeah, it's really really similar, and yeah, it's unbelievably disappointing, and yeah.
How would you describe, Karen, the relationship between the United States and the Annex One countries?
Well,
mainly with the European Union, for example.
So it's funny because the United States actually makes the European Union look good. So the European Union is certainly deserving of a ton of criticism. You know, their targets are terrible. I'm saying this on Radio Mutual, and I wouldn't say that maybe on certain stations. But their targets are not at all in line with what science requires in terms of, you know, the Intergovernmental Panel on Climate Change, for example, says we need 25% to 40% below 1990, and that's based on old science. So we need more than that, actually. And so they're offering 20% maybe, possibly up to 30%. But again, they reach it with tons and tons of offsets. Their financing package now is very similar to what Clinton put forward today, except that their financing package, as far as I know, is not contingent on China taking certain mitigation commitments, for example. But I think that a lot of countries in the EU are using the U.S. as an excuse to try to get out of the Kyoto Protocol and try to get out of their reduction commitments and try to get out, try to get rid of the distinction between Annex One and non-Annex One countries or between developed and developing countries. So, yeah, the EU is difficult. I'm putting them in the context of the U.S., but It's really troubling to see how they try to use their colonial powers. So you have France trying to, you know, wine and dine Francophone Africa. And also, I mean, the UK is putting pressure on this package. And what this package that the EU has put forward on financing, now yesterday we had the Prime Minister of Ethiopia just sort of on his own saying, I like this. This sounds good, but without consulting, you know, most other African heads of state, without respect for the proper processes, and sort of undermining the positions of many of the other African countries, and that's in part, you know, because of Sarkozy, of France, of Gordon Brown of the UK. The developed countries in these negotiations are the bloc. They are the obstacle to getting a just and effective climate agreement. And rich nations are going to try to blame developing countries. It is the rich nations that are the problem. They cause the problem. They don't want to deal with the mess they created, and now they want developing countries to pay.
Today it says that it is supposed to be ending these negotiations tomorrow. Do you have any news from inside the Bella Center from of today?
Well, so first of all, there's a huge problem because most of us aren't allowed in the Bella Center today. And yesterday, really zero. None of us were allowed, and then we negotiated to get some. They don't apparently like Friends of the Earth International too much at the UN Framework Convention on Climate Change at the UN. And today we have two or three people officially inside. And we were supposed to actually have Nimo Bassi, who is the head of Friends of the Earth International from Nigeria, and another man, Assad, from the UK. They were supposed to be allowed inside, and they were barred for some reason. So we're getting reports, but it's all rumors. This process is incredibly untransparent, so you really actually don't know what's happening, and everybody has a different story, and everybody heard somebody say something else. So what's actually going on, I don't know, but the rumors we hear are not good. It's about trying to, you know, merge the two negotiating tracks between the Kyoto Protocol and the Bali Action Plan, you know, get rid of the Kyoto Protocol. The Danes trying to sort of parachute in their own text to replace the negotiations text that reflects years of work. you know, and we heard today about, you know, Hillary Clinton's announcement, and it's a guessing game, and everybody has a different analysis, but it's really hard to see how this is going to end well.
I know it's a difficult question, but what do you think that could be happening at the end of this tomorrow, or maybe the day after tomorrow? What results are you really thinking that this is going to happen?
Who knows? I mean, like I said, it's really hard to see any sort of positive outcome. It depends on whether developed countries succeed in sort of buying off different heads of state in terms of saying, oh, we'll give you $10 billion until 2012, and that should take care of the problem. I mean, all these heads of states are elected, and they want to stay in power for another 3 or 4 years, that they're responding to that. And there's a lot of colonial politicking involved. I don't know what's the outcome. I mean, if there's a stalemate, if nothing's resolved here, that's better than if we get something like the Kyoto Protocol ending or merging into another track. I mean, what we need to see is a second amendment, an amendment for a second commitment period under the Kyoto Protocol starting in 2013, and that has to be a prerequisite for anything else moving forward, and developing countries have to stay strong on that, but that's a hard thing, and there's a lot of developing countries, and every country has a zillion different political factors that contribute to what it is, and then you multiply that by 192 because there's 192 countries here. So these are really hard negotiations, and they're not really so much about climate as they are about economics, political control, and sort of geopolitical strategy. And so, yeah, very little of this is actually about climate. It's about power. So.
Okay, it was Karen Ornstein from Friends of the Earth, United States. Thank you very much, Karen.
Thank you, Jose. Maybe I can eat pizza.
You're listening to Real World News.